Good morning, 88.5 KRFY listeners, and thanks for tuning in to the Wednesday edition of the morning show. It is January 9th, and I'm your host today, Susie Prez. And today I am pleased to present a recorded interview that, along with my co-host Chris Bessler, was facilitated in December with District 1 legislators, Representative Heather Scott, Representative Sage Dixon, and newly elected Senator Jim Woodward. But before we get to the interview, a bit of information and news. The road conditions are very icy and slick. The city and the county have been out plowing, but it's still very cold rain out there on the roadways. So drive with the utmost caution. All Lake Pendere School District schools are closed today, January 9th, due to freezing rain and very slick road conditions across the county. Also, the Sandpoint Waldorf School is closed. And I think we should hear the weather next. Let's see what the weather is. Currently, it's 30 degrees, and they're telling us that snow is possible mixed with freezing rain before 10 a.m., and then it's just rain, patchy fog after 10 a.m., highs near 37 today, winds 5 to 7 miles per hour, becoming light and variable in the morning. Chance of precipitation is 90%. Some of that will be snow and rain and ice. Today, we can expect a very little bit of ice accumulation, but up to a half inch possible of snow. Tonight, rain, patchy fog between 9 and 1 a.m., low around 35. So today's high is 37, as I said. Tomorrow, high 41, low 31 in Thursday night. Diminishing chance of precipitation on Thursday. But I like looking ahead a little bit. Friday, I'm seeing patchy fog, then partly sunny, high of 41. And on Saturday, partly patchy fog, and then mostly sunny, high of 39. Almost spring-like weather in the middle of January. A bit of other information. A new segment on the Wednesday morning show we're calling the Sandpoint City Minute, with news and information of city interest. Today, I heard from Jennifer Stapleton last night that the city has an opening for commissioner on the City Planning and Zoning Commission. Commissioners must have been residents of the city of Sandpoint for at least 2 years. Applications are available on engagesandpoint.com, in our office, or on our website at sandpointidaho.gov. They must be submitted by tomorrow. That's Thursday, January 10th. So if sitting on the City Planning and Zoning Commission is just what you've been looking for, you could go down there and apply for that position. Engage Sandpoint is a new resource to keep citizens connected to city happenings, report issues, find resources, stay informed. You can sign up at the city website, sandpointidaho.com. And now, let's see, we're getting to the end of our song here. We have, as I said, the opportunity to speak with District 1 and we offered this to our District 1 representatives so that they could speak to the constituents prior to the beginning of the 2019 legislative session. They spoke about their views on the important issues, committee assignments, budget processes, and the next step for Medicaid expansion, along with a picture of how to get an idea, becomes a bill, and then into law if passed. So now, here is the recorded interview with Representative Heather Scott, Representative Sage Dixon, and Senator Jim Woodward. And by the way, if this interview will be available on our website just after the show at krfy.org under podcast. And here is the interview. Thanks for listening. We are here with newly elected representatives Heather Scott and Sage Dixon, re-elected, I should say, and brand new State Senator Jim Woodward, who is succeeding Sean Keogh in that seat. And we want to, first of all, thank you for sitting down with us today and engaging and informing and inspiring your constituents. And also, congratulations for your successful campaigns and election wins. It is a big responsibility representing District 1, and we thank you for your service.
So we're going to jump into some questions now. We thought we would start with the old hands here, Heather and Sage, since you both have been down in the legislature for a couple terms each, at least now. Heather, how about you? Why don't you walk us through what happens down there beginning on Monday, January 7th? How does this session begin? And give us a little word picture of what the scene, you know, what's it like in Boise in the Capitol building as the legislature gets started?
So the first week's pretty exciting. I think we have about 24 new legislators in the House this year. So it's a lot of people asking questions, where's this, where's that? We like to think we're all ready to go, and we all kind of plan to be ready to go, but there's all kinds of glitches with getting the computer set up, last minute figuring out who your secretary is and the offices. So there's actually a lot of administrative stuff that goes on that first week. Committees are usually just organizing and getting their schedules set up. So the first week will be light on the work. Some of the committees may get going and take a look at some of the rules that are coming through, but really a lot of organization and real short sessions, you know, maybe 10 minutes just to go through the procedure every day. And then starting that second week, that's when things start to really happen. And we'll dig into the rules for about the first month all through January. Administrative rules and regulations, which I've talked about a lot, they're all written by bureaucrats across the state with public input, and that's when the legislature takes one final look to make sure everything looks fine to pass it through as code.
So the legislature, we know, has certain duties that come to it kind of automatically, such as passing a budget to fund the services in the state. Sage, what would you say the main duties of the legislature are?
I think our main duty is to represent our constituents and to affect good law and legislation for the state as a whole, not just our specific districts. The way it may sound like a tedious process, but there's a lot that goes into that with similar to what Representative Scott just described, that somebody gets an idea, they go to what's called the Legislative Services Office, and they have a bill drafted. And that's also something that we as legislators can sign a slip to allow constituents to do themselves, or lobbyists or somebody else, if they want to be responsible for that bill themselves, to take it to the committee chairman or to bring it to a committee. After the bill is drafted in its initial form, it's called an RS, a routing slip, and we have what's called a print hearing. And you take that RS to a committee chairman, hopefully the germane committee. Sometimes it doesn't always work out that way, but then the chairman will allow to have a print hearing, and so that you go before the committee and explain why you want this to become a bill. It's very brief, but it's one level of filtration that we have, so that things that may waste our time, as it were, do not come through the committee. And the committee agrees, and then it will be assigned a bill number. If they say, yes, this idea has merit, then it goes back to LSO and they give it an actual bill number, House number or House Bill 1 or Senate Bill 1. Then it comes back to that same committee. Actually, first it'll go to either the pro tem or the Speaker of the House, and they direct it to the committee that they think is the germane committee at that point. And then you'll have a committee hearing. The chairman of that committee will then assign a hearing, and you come, and then that's when you really dig into those ideas. The committee will start to say, what's this about, a lot more, and you can have public testimony on that at that point. If it passes that committee, then it'll go to the House floor or Senate floor for a second reading. You have to have three readings in Idaho is what our Constitution says. And so they'll read it across the desk. This is House Bill 1 pertaining to automobile licensing. Goes on the third reading calendar at that point. And then the third day, it'll come before whatever body it is, and you'll vote on it at that point. The sponsor of the bill stands up and debates the bill, and there can be opposition debate or nothing at all. It goes, and then we go vote. And then that process starts all over again from the first committee hearing in the opposing body, across the rotunda, as we call it, either the Senate or the House. So you will take a House bill into the Senate committee. The chairman will schedule it, and then you'll go present that idea before the Senate committee, and they will say yay or nay. And then it goes on to their reading calendar. Same process, second reading, third reading, the vote. After that, comes to the governor's desk. And there's not usually a legislative process there. You can try and lobby the governor if you'd like, and some people do. But generally, it's up to him as the executive branch then to decide whether that bill will become law. That's big picture, legislative process and what happens.
It sounds complicated. And if you can, Representative Scott and Representative Dixon, if you can think back, was it 4 years ago when you first went down to Boise?
Yes.
And did you get an orientation? And will our newly elected senator for District 1, Jim Woodward, will he get an orientation to this very complicated sort of sounding system?
It sounds complicated, but it's pretty basic when you get there. It's all really orchestrated, and you do get a week, the week prior, back in December when we had a reorganization meeting, we had a time to go over and learn all the new stuff as a new legislature, and I'm sure this would be a good tie-in for Jim.
I did attend the orientation session in December. That was the 3 days preceding the organizational session, which was December 7th, where the committee assignments, committee chairs were selected. And then so we're geared up, have a laptop ready to go, and learned a lot of that process was reinforced. The one thing I might add that on this week coming up with the inauguration and the State of the State address. So it's Saturday, January 5th, is the inauguration of the governor, along with the inaugural ball that evening. And then the State of the State happens on January 7th, Monday, which the entire legislative session is live streamed now. And so if you go to legislature.idaho.gov, there is a link on the top of that for live streaming, and you can watch the State of the State and hear directly from the governor what his priorities are.
Okay, this actually is going to air on the 9th, so we're talking okay. About past tenses, folks. Hear this, although Jim, we will be sure to mention that and raise some awareness of that that's happening, because the state actually has a really good website where you can find what's going on. Do you know the address on that?
Legislature.idaho.gov.
Legislature.idaho.gov.
There's a tab at the top for live streaming, and that will. That tab will send you over to the Idaho Public Television website.
Okay. Yeah. Great way to stay connected with what's happening down in the legislature.
In accordance with what Jim was saying, the State of the State is a very important thing. It's neat to witness. It's an important thing for us to be a part of. And it is a very pomp-filled, traditional event, because we all, it happens in the House, and the whole House is seated, and then we introduce the Senate, and the Senate comes in and sits with us, and then we introduce next comes the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court comes and sits down, and then the Lieutenant Governor and the Secretary of State and all the constitutional officers come in. The gallery is full, the VIP section is full, and the speaker is then introduces the governor, and the governor comes in and begins his State of the State speech. And so it's a pretty neat event to be a part of, and there is a real buzz that Monday morning with the new people, and even those of us that have gone through this a couple times. It's still an important part of our government and something neat to be part of.
It sounds impressive, and we can encourage our listeners. There's probably a podcast of it, because this will be airing after the fact.
Correct.
And the party will be over, and you'll be hard at work in your offices there. But you can go to legislator.com.
Legislature.
Legislature.idaho.gov.
Right.
And you can probably find that podcast.
Right. Idaho Public Television, I'm sure, we'll still have it running.
Exactly.
Okay, well, so that's kind of the high-level overview of what happens down there in the legislature. So you guys are going to get down there, and there's going to be a ton of issues that are coming up over the course of this session. So let's dig in on what might be coming up this year. And I guess, Heather, why don't we start with you? What do you predict will be some of the biggest issues or matters that need to be decided in this coming legislative session?
So the proposition that passed, Medicaid expansion, will be a big issue, because now it's in the legislature's hand, and we have to determine what funding looks like, and if it's funded, and what that looks like. And so that's going to be overshadowing probably the whole session, and my guess is that decision will probably come out the last day of session. So for 3 months we'll probably be debating and wheeling and dealing and figuring out where the money's going to come from for something like this. So that's going to be the big topic in Boise this year. And then also, we always have the transportation issue and the schools issues. Those are the three biggest issues that we deal with as a state, and that's a lot of the time is spent how the money is going to be shuffled around and which percentage is going to go where.
So Sage, we'll turn that question to you and maybe drill down a little bit. Do you see particular pieces of legislature relating to the education part of the duties down there that you anticipate will come up?
Absolutely. The public funding formula committee that I've been working on for 3 years, that we have some draft legislation that will be coming before the germane committees. And there's already a bit of unease now that it's a reality. There's been a lot of pushback from the industry, if I'll call it that, trying, not ready for that change. You're not seeing it as necessarily beneficial. And we were anticipating that, but that's going to be an interesting, hopefully not battle, but discussions going on, because we put a lot of thought and process into this. And I think we came out with a very good product. But I'm starting to receive calls from other legislators up here in the north that are talking to their superintendents that are concerned about what this looks like. But it's been an open process for these 3 years. We've had all the superintendents involved and all stakeholders, as we'll say, involved. And I'm hoping that it doesn't get pared down too much. But there will be a lot of pressure on those two education committees in the House and the Senate to, I believe, to change what we've come up with.
And has our superintendent here, Sean Woodward, been involved in this as well?
Yep, yeah. And the business manager, I've communicated with them extensively, and Lisa House actually came down and was participating in one of the meetings there. And there's some concerns as well, but I've tried to give them as much information as I can, because initially there looks like there may be some districts that are losing money, but we have a hold harmless provision. And then once that hold harmless provision is done after 3 years, if you project it out correctly, everybody is doing fine. Now, the only caveat there is it depends on how much money the legislature puts into education, but that would still affect education even without this change in the formula. This is a far more child-centered formula than building-centered formula, and that's what we were striking out to reach.
Okay. Bring that question over to you, Jim. Do you foresee some big issues coming up in the state? And one that Heather mentioned is transportation.
I do see the one topic that affects all of these discussions is our income tax withholding, the uncertainty in the revenue this year because of the tax changes that happened in 2017 at the federal level, and then last year's Idaho 2018 conformity bill. Idaho tax structure and federal tax structure don't parallel as well as they used to for the last few decades. The result is that people should be adjusting their W-4 and have a different number potentially for state and federal. And a lot of us haven't done that yet. And so that's going to be a surprise for some people this year, that they may not have the normal state income tax refund that they anticipate, even though they didn't change their withholding amount. And if someone's income or their earnings have not changed and they didn't change their tax withholding number, they still may not have the same refund that they anticipate. And some people use that as a personal piggy bank for the middle of the winter here. So that might be a surprise to some. But and where that affects the state discussions, Medicaid, school funding, transportation, is that there's some uncertainty right now about the state revenues. State revenue primarily consists of income tax, sales tax, and corporate income tax. Sales tax and corporate income tax are both above projections right now. We know that the economy is strong. We would expect that income tax withholding would also be. But because it's not, that's where we've realized that the withholding tables don't work the way they used to with those tax changes. And so now we're going to set a budget by the end of the session, but the tax year is April 15th. We won't know for sure what tax revenues are for the year. And so there's going to be some uncertainty and some heavy discussion about where revenues really will be, because we are constitutionally mandated to set a balanced budget.
So it sounds like the withholding change mid-year in 2018 didn't necessarily change on folks' paychecks, but the 2019 amount, the new withholding schedule, will reflect that change.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that if, say, you when you go through and you fill out your form W-4, you get a 2 or a 3 if you're withholding allowance. That number, if you go through and use the Idaho specific instructions that were issued this year, it'll be a different number. Mm-hmm. And so The important point to make is that the legislature last year did pass an income tax reduction, and so we went from at the maximum rate in Idaho of 7.4% to 6.925. So there was a reduction in income tax.
So when you're doing the budget process prior to finding out what that actual number is, can you do contingencies? And that's probably what you do. You try to guess, or anyways, it's all about projecting.
And Representative Dixon has been part of that process, because when you're on the Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee, which he's served on a couple of years, and I will be serving on, but he's been through that process because there are meetings during the year for updates. So maybe he can.
Yeah, we have projections both from the governor's office and from the legislative services office. There's budget analysts. We have at the Department of Financial Management in the executive branch, and then budget analysts in the legislative services office. And we get monthly updates saying, here's where we are. And most legislators get those also. But on JFAC, they drill down a little bit more, saying, here's what money we have already committed to spend and what it's looking like with projected revenues coming in, and here's what actual revenues are. And so you see that trajectory while you're in the legislature, but also as the year goes on, you'll get those updates. And then there's twice a year meetings where we meet with different agencies to see what they've done with the money, and what it's always an ask also why they need more money the upcoming year. But this year is difficult because of the tax reform, both federally and in the state of Idaho. It's going to be very difficult on that JFAC committee to make some concrete decisions, because our economy looked really good going forward, and we've set up ourselves to spend some of that money, most of it, and hoping that more would be coming in. But now there's this shortfall in income tax.
We can always have a yard sale.
You know, it's not a bad idea.
This is a great understanding of how our Idaho government works. A little civics 101 here. So thank you for that. Let's move on a little bit. There are specific legislation that each of you probably has as something that's important to you. So individually, is there anything that you hope will be brought forth, or you will be bringing it forth and try to get passed?
My role is shifting a little bit this year. There's always things that come to us during the year, and you think, this is a great idea, I'm going to run some legislation. What I have found every year is I go down there, and that gets pushed to the side, and some other topic comes into your purview, your lap, and you start running with that. There is one thing, actually, that comes to mind before I say that. There's some legislation to help our local breweries, and breweries in the state in general. It's antiquated law, and the craft brewery industry is growing so rapidly that there's some inequity between alcohol and wine laws compared to beer laws. And so something like that, I did 3 years ago, and it was successful. And so there's other things that need to be arranged, I think we'll both be working on in the House and the Senate for the benefit of not only our district, but the state. But I have been appointed a chairman of the business committee in this upcoming term. And so my role will be shifting a little bit as deciding what legislation, and in my opinion, everything that comes to my desk, I'll let go through with different things. But anyway, I will have to be managing that committee. Don't know what that time constraint is going to be, if I'm actually going to have time to run legislation on my own. So that'll be new to me, and I'll have to see how that goes as the session goes on.
So you mentioned you're going to be chairing that committee.
Yes.
That gives you the ability basically to set the agenda and maybe say, hey, we don't really want to consider this legislation?
Correct. I have had an issue with that because as elected representatives, we have ideas that we're to bring on behalf of our constituents, and all those ideas should be heard and debated. We also need to vote yay or nay on those and be held accountable for those votes and explain them. So it's a common practice, what's called holding bills or putting them in the drawer, and that's a political move often. Now, there's some of that becomes parrying between the House and Senate. We want our things heard, and they want their things heard. And so in that sense, maybe a little bit, but for the most part, if a legislator is coming to me and saying, this is a bill that I would like heard, then I think that's what needs to happen, and not be hiding bills for the sake of protecting people, or if it's something I don't like.
Or special interests.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's a big issue I've had for 4 years that we've been pushing back against as Liberty folks, is many the voices of the people are not being heard. The agenda is being set by the executive branch or the Speaker of the House. And if the bill doesn't fall in line with their agenda, it's not heard, it's not debated. And a lot of times We need to debate these issues, even when we're on opposite sides, because we'll never come to common grounds. And I'll never hear the other side, and they'll never hear my side. So to me, it's huge that these bills get heard. And to sit on them is a disservice to our citizens. So that's a very critical, I mean, I'm very passionate about that, as you probably have followed.
So do you have some ideas of how to, you mentioned more debate, so that you can really hear each other, but other ways to bridge that divide that you just mentioned, Representative Scott?
So, you know, here's the problem. The problem is the party system. And the party system basically wants to protect the parties. And so to force a vote on things that may be an uncomfortable vote to get someone reelected, they don't want to put it on the record. So let's just say that there's, I'm trying to think of something that would be pretty partisan, maybe abortion. So pro-life, anti-life. So if you're trying to protect your committee members, you don't want them to have to make that hard vote, because they're going to be on the record if they're pro-life or not pro-life, and the citizens will know their record. And that's a control mechanism by leadership or the establishment to protect people in the party. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. And we see, as just citizens, we see reports of certain sorts of legislation just never getting up to vote because it gets, you know,
right,
put in the drawer, as you say, Sage.
The executive branch controlled quite a bit in our first two terms, Representative Scott and myself. And so there's opportunity now to change that a little bit with a new leader of the executive branch. And I'm hopeful that he won't try and push on the legislature quite as much. We weren't behaving as the legislature should behave, in that you would have executive branch officials come in and present legislation. It wasn't a legislator. And that was always very annoying to me as a legislator, and the separation of powers, the way we were structured, that was an abridgment of that, that we shouldn't have allowed as a legislature. So I'm hopeful that that will change. And in my committee, it'll certainly change. I am hopeful also that in our chairman's meeting, the speaker said he wants to make sure more bills are heard. And so from external forces and internal forces, I think he's seeing value in that. And so that's very encouraging to me that we shouldn't have this issue. I don't think it'll completely go away, mind you, because of the political aspects of it and what Representative Scott just explained.
It's practically human nature.
It is. And this is the way a lot of people, a lot of people have grown up in the legislature. When they were new and they've seen this happen with consecutive speakers and pro tems and the way the system is controlled and manipulated, and there's a comfort in that. So trying to pare that back down to the foundations where it was more open discussion and debate of ideas is something that's important to me, and so we'll keep pushing in that direction.
And if I could expand on what Representative Dixon said, the executive branch, every year before session, they release their bill ideas, and right now they're released. You can view them at departmentoffinancialmanagement.com, or if you go to the website Growing Freedom for Idaho, you'll be able to track all the bills. And part of that is all the agency bills from the executive branch. And those will all, I could pretty much, I'm not a gambling gal, but I could pretty much guarantee you all those bills will soar right through the legislature, because that's kind of the trend we've been on.
Are these bills that were put forth by the current governor? Because we have a new governor coming in a week or
executive branch. So it's not from the new governor, but it's the last minute things from last year. And it happens every year. The one thing I have noticed this year is last year there was about 124 bills from the executive branch. This year there's only about 50 or so. So maybe it's a transition year. Maybe they'll back down a bit.
Mm-hmm. So my observations from outside the process, last year during the legislative session, there were about 900 bills put forth, and there were about 300 that went into law. In 3 months to cover 900 bills, if they were all of great substance, that would be impossible. A lot of these bills are small administrative changes. And so part of the reason you see them come from the administrative branch, I believe, that I've read, they are changes. There are people in the administration who work with these throughout the year and see a problem that maybe a piece of legislation was passed in recent history and there were some unintended consequences or something that wasn't seen ahead of time, and there needs to be a small change or a tweak made, and that's where some of those come. But I certainly agree that legislature should originate with the people.
So my point, I'm sorry.
That's our civics lesson right here. The legislature writes the law and the governor's supposed to execute.
Correct. And that's fine if the governor has an agenda that he is important to him and that he ran on. Go find a legislator to carry that bill. Don't bring one of your staff people in. And chairman shouldn't allow it and the speaker shouldn't allow it. That's my issue. General executive branch legislation is a lot of what Senator Woodward just said, but at the same time what Representative Scott was saying, there's a lot of changes and sometimes things that the bureaucracy wants to see get snuck in that way. And so we have to be diligent. If we don't have that opportunity to debate it and dig in, we're not serving our constituents correctly in that. So my largest source of ire, though, is when I have a staff member of the governor there in a committee presenting a bill and it's not a legislator. Go get a legislator. If no legislator think there's merit in that idea, I'm sorry, but that's our process.
Okay. Well, let's go back to the question that's kind of on the table still. Jim Woodward, what do you are there specific pieces of legislation that you'd like to bring forward this year yourself?
I don't have any right now. I have a list of constituent issues that I've already gathered or have added up, some smaller things to take care of. But I have agreed to co-sponsor on the Senate side the bill that Representative Dixon spoke about of on the craft brewing. So where he'll
potentially
sponsor that in the House.
Hopefully they'll get to the Senate.
I believe that our senator from District 7, which includes the folks here in Bottle Bay, Garfield, and that area, will be sponsoring that bill on craft brewing. And I've agreed to co-sponsor that.
Okay. And Heather, same question to you. Is there a particular legislation that you want to bring forward in this session?
I have a couple bills. It's amazing when you get down there what you think you're going to run and what you end up running. So I think last year I had 23 bills. And as the conversations go, you just maybe decide you're going to wait on bills. A lot of constituent bills, some retired law enforcement officer bills, and just a big mix.
Okay, well, thank you, Representative Scott. Moving on, we're going to get to some specific issues that probably are there, but one of the things that over the years you keep hearing is the disconnect between the North Idaho and Boise, the southern part of the state. We're very different. We're far removed. Do you think there is a north-south divide that makes it tougher to get legislation for our constituents up here, or your constituents, I should say, up here? Is there a divide that is something you're going to have to be aware of and continue to work on?
There's still a geographical isolation, but we're certainly different in the rate at which we communicate. And we have remote testimony for hearings now. I think there's a pilot project still in place.
Yeah, it's pilot still.
But we can go down to NIC for some of the committee hearings and testify in front of a committee, where people who live closer to Boise have always had the opportunity to run into the Capitol when a committee hearing is happening and voice their opinion. We're all Idahoans, though, and there's a difference in what people do for a living and how their daily lives run. But I think as a whole, we're a state and getting closer with the internet and modern technology.
Cool. I'd say there's a huge divide, for sure. One, just geographically. People can't just show up if they don't like a bill and comment on it. It's really hard. And in the pilot project last year, I think there was only two bills out of 600 bills that we heard that citizens up here actually had a voice. The other thing is just politics in general and the way it works and people in the know and the communication. It's when you're down there, you live it. And it's a very urban area compared to our area, which overall people live in cities, but it's rural up here. We all drive about an hour to go to the big city. They 5 minutes and they're where they need to be. So there is a disconnect, a definite disconnect in ideas. And that's why it's so important that we have the debates on these bills, because something that sounds like a great idea for us up north doesn't make sense down in the big city. And the same as some of their legislation, I think, one of the guys I work with, Representative McCrosty. We're always talking about guns and what that looks like in downtown Boise and what that looks like up in North Idaho. And he's like, well, why can't we pass this? And I'm like, that would pretty much shut down everyone in my area doing this. And so those conversations need to be had because we are very different. We are alike and we all love our families. We love our state. We want the best for people. But we do think differently.
You get different ideas. I certainly agree with that.
Yeah. There's a difference between population density drives it. And we have 1.7 million people in the state. And there are, I don't know if it's 400,000 or 500,000 right in the Boise area. But we have a legislature that represents the entire state, 44,000 or so people per district, and they're the 35 districts. So, but because the capital's there, and most of the people around that, there's certainly better access.
A perfect example is schools. I mean, look how long our kids are on school buses compared to Boise, where a lot of the kids just walk to school. Mm-hmm. So that there is a huge disconnect because they don't even deal with school buses in some of those areas.
Where I have found this largest divide is in the financing part of things and revenues, because we're smaller. We don't necessarily input quite as much revenue into the state. And those are the discussions that I've had. I won't say arguments, but when we receive funds up here that folks down south wanted, there's some chiding that goes on a little bit in that we don't deserve that because we don't put as much in. Everybody is united in the sense of trying to do well for the state, but there are definitive differences as well. Just the sheer numbers. Most of the legislators come from those larger population areas, and they're not from District 8 North. I mean, we're just not populated as much. So there's a general drive in that direction. And there's a lot of common area, but there are some specific things, as Rep. Scott was saying, that are different for us up here. But I have also found a lot of great support when we were working on Priest Lake. It's a water issue. And we've supported water issues in the South that really have nothing to do with us. And we don't really understand because their situation with ag and water is totally different. But they were very supportive in us getting this financing to do what we needed to do up north. So even though there's that divide, we still generally work together, but it pops up every now and then.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we're going to get into a few specific issues that are going to come up. The first one, which you already mentioned, Heather, is the Medicaid expansion. And if you're just coming up to speed on this, this is the expansion of Medicaid that was passed by Proposition 2 that was on the ballot. Through the Affordable Care Act, the federal government will cover about 90% of the expansion's cost, at least to start, which leaves the state to contribute an estimated average, the figure we've seen is $10 million a year to fund the program. The legislature will be tasked with allocating those funds or debating whether to do it at all. And I'd like to start, I guess, with you, Heather. What do you foresee for this particular issue?
So right now, this issue is in the Supreme Court. And so I think it's probably premature until the court makes a ruling to really know what's going to happen with it. Once that ruling is made, and if the legislature does deal with it, it's basically going to be, where do we find the money? And who do we take the money from so we can fund it? Or do we raise taxes? Do we raise taxes? Do we take money from the schools? Do we take money from the roads? Where do we find the money to do the $10 million? And so that, unfortunately, takes place in appropriations. There's not really much. If you're in other committees, you don't really have those debates. You don't have those conversations. And so that'll be worked out in the Finance Committee. Senator Woodward will be a big part of those conversations, and that's where it's all going to happen, unfortunately.
So, Senator Woodward, weigh in on this question. You know, what do you foresee for the Medicaid expansion?
Well, when I talked about that income tax withholding, that's what creates the uncertainty there. Typically, you know, with the strong economy we've seen for a number of years now, the budget is set at a level which And then at the end of the year, it turns out that budget was less than what the revenue that's brought in. And so that money has been available in the past to fund Medicaid expansion. When we have more revenue come in than what was budgeted, what we do right now, the program right now, is half that goes into a rainy day fund, and the other half goes to transportation through the local strategic initiatives program. And so that has been... What was the amount last year, Representative Dixon?
The total.
$100 million of money that was in excess of expected. And so $50 million went in the rainy day fund, $50 million went to transportation initiatives, and we saw some of that up here in our district. This year, it'll just be a bigger question, and it's going to be, can we go back and figure out, or are we going to say with some certainty that come April 15th, or that we will, that all of that that income tax withholding that hasn't been happening, is it going to then show up? And that, if we can answer that question with certainty, it'll make those other budgeting questions easier.
Okay. And Representative Dixon, same question to you.
Well, I think $10 million is an extremely optimistic number annually. And we were projecting 25 in the summer before this passed. And I just, when I was out speaking with another JFAC member and presenting part of our state's budget, it's going to be difficult to fund this. And what it looks like going forward, I discussed with you during the election my feelings on this and what I saw happening and the errors I thought in going this direction. And that all still stands as far as, can we constrain enrollment? Because no other state has constrained enrollment. It's cost states exponentially more than the projections of so-called independent analyzers were saying, and I think we're in the same situation. So it's going to be some projections have been 100 million. So it all depends on who is signing up for this. Do we constrain that somehow? What requirements? There's actually not any requirements we can put on this. I am not entirely clear about what we can actually do other than saying yes or no, if we can put any stipulations on enrollment to cap it where we don't have to spend so much so we're not jeopardizing the state's budget and having to raise taxes or cut other things. I believe we're going to have a dip at the end of 2019. A lot of serious economists are thinking that. In the recession, we're already on a little bumpy ride right now. So those are concerns of mine, having served on that Appropriations Committee for 2 years and being deeply involved in our budget going forward. I'm sure we'll fund something. That's assuming the lawsuit doesn't go through, which would annul the proposition. But what that's going to look like, I don't know. I just have a lot of concerns for the state going forward and what this is going to look like for our existing requirements or responsibilities, I will say, to the state.
So the folks that are going to be covered in this Medicaid expansion, they're getting their health care somewhere. And what we understand is that some of them are getting into indigent programs, that counties are incurring more expenses, and hopefully that will relieve some of the expense that's experienced in other parts of our government. Do you think that has any role in how the legislature might say, okay, you know, these people are getting covered in other ways, and the state now will be assuming a piece of that, and the federal government actually 90% of it?
Right, and that's another danger, is that can change at any time also, that 90%. And depending on what happens in 2020, that could change. If we continue with this administration, they may look at it as something that they don't want to fund, the ruling that just came out of Texas. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with the Affordable Care Act overall. Separate component here, that was a component of the original legislation, but still, all that going forward could change what we're receiving from the federal government, which jeopardizes us even more. Once we start this, it's not going to be easy to stop. Now, Montana had a sunset when they passed it a couple years ago, and they chose not to continue because they saw how harmful it was to the state. I'm not sure if we can do that. That would be something I would be supportive of. If we're moving forward with this, let's take a look at it after a couple years, and is it what we thought it would be? Is it serving these people correctly, or is it just another big empty hole that we're tossing money into? I mean, some people will be served, obviously, in that sense, but is it growing far more beyond these projections where it's harming other programs within the state? Some of that may be relieved, but a lot of that burden can then still fall to counties if we get rid of the CAP program, the money that we send counties to help with the indigent funds. There's still a lot of people that won't be covered because they won't qualify for the expansion, and they will still be coming to the counties. So there's a danger there for counties as well. I will say my mind has been on other things. I haven't dove that deeply into this, but I hope to, given the time with my other responsibilities.
It sounds complicated, uncertain, and yet to be determined.
Well
so
said.
That it will be on your agenda. And thank you for your views on that. Moving on to education, it's already been said as one of the other big issues lawmakers will face. Teacher salaries are a big one. The legislature will have to decide whether to fund the final year of the career ladder, which Idaho must be in the fifth year of a $250 million plan to increase teachers' pay. So what do you think about education and how we're going to move forward to make secure and shore up a very important aspect of your job?
Well, I think we are dedicated to finalizing that fifth year at the very least. Some of the question that's coming up now is what then? And with the new public school funding formula, what does teacher funding look like after that? And there's not been any clear answer that I'm aware of at this point. Senator Woodward, I'm sure, will hear a lot when he's serving on JFAC about that. But this goes back to our prior conversation about money, how much there is available, what is it going to? So does the Medicaid expansion now jeopardize this final year because we have to appropriate funds for it? The funds aren't looking like they're there. Will we have the rubber band effect in April when people have to do their returns? I think the intention is to, and it's been an important part of education within the state, but there's somewhat of a question mark there. That's just my feeling. I mean, until we know what happens with Medicaid and what those costs are, I think we'll go ahead and do that. But it's going to be a lot of difficult work in JFAC, and then we on the floor have to vote for these things also.
Mm-hmm. Jim Woodward, any thoughts on that particular issue?
Sorry, I was off thinking about that in a different aspect of it, but. I am certainly hopeful that the fifth year of the career ladder is funded, and I think that has worked well as a plan for the legislature every year to come forward a strategic plan to say what are we doing with education this year, but yes or no, can we take care of this? And so now the challenge is to set out another plan. In fact, I wish that we had already had a plan in place because we should always have a five-year outlook. And so as you finish one year, you should then need to reset that plan and say, what is our plan? It's 2018 right now. Where do we want to be in 2023? Now it's 2019. Where do we want to be in 2024? Mm-hmm. So we'll push for that.
Okay. Well, I know it is a concern, especially for Lake Padre School District, that teacher salaries stay competitive because it helps with the recruitment and retention of
Absolutely.
Teachers. So good luck with that, you guys. let's move on to another subject, and we are going to run out of time here pretty soon, but let's talk about criminal justice. The Idaho Department of Corrections is discussing a $500 million prison expansion. Is that a matter that the legislature is likely to take up, Heather Scott?
I don't know. I haven't heard much about that, but that being said, being as all the states around us have decriminalized marijuana, and then our state has not. Everyone traveling through our state, which we are, they're all criminals. And
ones that are carrying pot, yeah.
Literally, they are. And so I don't know what they're thinking. And I don't know. I'm back on Judicial and Rules Committee this year. I'm pretty excited to be back on that. And dig into the prison systems deeper this year. We have a big problem with
recidivism, repeat offenders.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And I think we really need to look at some of our parole issues and why people that get out or are, you know, starting back to life, why are they having struggles and getting put back in the system? And I think we need to look at the resources or what the tools they need to become productive citizens. I don't know much about this prison, but I truly think that educational stuff in our prisons and getting people back on the right tracks, off their addictions, and some of those will be critical to get productive citizens back into society. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'd like to focus on more than building another prison, but
reduce the population of inmates.
Yes,
yeah.
And so people aren't going back into prison.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts before we move on?
I think that's a long shot to get any money for that with the other
that
issues
much money.
That we have.
Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. There are some ideas about expanding our current prisons that are far more affordable, and there is a need. Unfortunately, our population is growing, and we're spending a lot of money and sending them out of state. However. There's some program reform that can be done, too, and judicial reform that I'm sure Rep. Scott will be dealing with as far as why we're putting so many in there. something that ties into that a little bit that's a cost coming up is the public defense situation. With the counties right now are bearing a lot of that cost, and there's a lawsuit going on that the state is involved with that is requiring us to make some changes on how this is done, and those costs keep growing exponentially for the counties. So as a state, we're going to have to deal with that, and I don't know what that will exactly look like right now, but I imagine it's going to be something that we take over a portion of, if not all of, so that the counties aren't having to bear this, and it works out better for our rural counties. It's pretty easy to do in Boise and Ada County, where there's a lot greater population, but that the public defense issue is a growing issue within the state that ties into what you were just discussing a little bit.
Okay, well, thank you. We want to look briefly at the local option taxes. A number of Idaho cities have been pushing for local sales tax to fund various economic development, infrastructure, and recreational projects. Currently, cities don't have the ability unless they are so-called resort cities. I guess Senator Lee Hyder, a Republican from Twin Falls, is on record that plans to introduce a bill allowing local taxing votes. What are the pros and cons of Idaho allowing this kind of local option taxing? Any of you, Representative Scott, Representative Dixon, or Senator Jim?
Jim, you want to start?
The resort city tax is an issue important to Sandpoint. I know that. I've had conversations over at City, and Sandpoint has the possibility of losing that status with the next census in 2020. Right now, the resort city designation is set for 10,000, a population of 10,000. There's a good chance that Sandpoint's going to be right at that limit, and it would significantly affect the Sandpoint city budget. So maybe that number should be different, because just because you're over 10,000 people, that doesn't necessarily mean you're not a resort city. And what is the purpose of a resort city designation? Well, you have to have that infrastructure in place so in the summertime or wintertime during ski season, when a lot of additional people are here, you still have the sewer mains, the water mains, all that has to be up to grade to hold that additional
And it falls on the local taxpayers. So the resort city spreads that out among some of these other users.
I think that if we lose our resort city designation, then the local hotel taxes go away as part of the city budget and some others. So something to definitely start thinking about and make sure that people can take care of their needs.
Any quick thoughts on that from Heather or
the
Sage?
Thing that I lead towards as far as local option taxes for the independent highway districts, because they don't receive a lot of funding. So if they had a project specific idea, and they're not allowed to do this now, I lean in the direction of that's appropriate, that if they go to the people they serve and say, we want to raise your taxes for this amount of time to build this project, that makes sense to me. I'm not generally in favor of raising taxes without anything specific in mind and in a never ending way.
Okay, well, we are about out of time. Let's go around one more time with each of you. And got any last words you want to mention to your constituents? And as well, tell us what committees you sit on so that your constituents have a better idea on that. Heather, why don't you start with you?
Okay, so the committees I'm on, State Affairs is my morning committee. State Affairs deals with elections and guns and abortion and some of the big social issues. The other committees I'm on is Judicial and Rules, and then my third committee is Environment, Energy, and Technology, which I've had a lot of recently 5G letters, concerns about 5G, so I don't know if we'll hit on that this year.
5G being internet connections,
yes,
right? Internet,
yes, connectivity, yeah. Sorry. And so I guess the message I would give to the constituents is, please get involved. I have a website, growingfreedomforidaho.com, and it tracks all the bills, and it simplifies all the bills into about two sentences, so you can know exactly how it's going to affect you as a citizen. You'll know who's sponsoring the bills and what committees they're in, or if they're sitting in a committee and not getting heard. And so I would encourage people to go to that site. I also just put a tab on there with It's Your Money, and it kind of shows some interesting information on where some of your tax dollars are going. And I think I'm going to try to get a tab up on Child Protective Services, because I've had a lot of issues with parental issues with kids and custody and stuff like that. So I'm hopefully put some information on that on there this year.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Dixon.
Third term, new third morning committee, third committee that I'm serving on. First term was education. Then they pulled me off of there to serve on JFAC for 2 years. And now I am pulled off of there because you cannot be a committee chairman and serve on JFAC. There's kind of an unwritten rule within the legislature. So I had to move off the Finance and Appropriation Committee. Now I'll be serving on Revenue and Tax. That's great. It's still dealing with finances and things I enjoy. Be the chair of the Business Committee in the afternoon and then still serving on the Transportation Committee, which is something I really enjoy and it's important for our district for us to have a voice up here. Communication is key, and I appreciate the communication I receive. I will admit I'm not always the best at getting back in a timely manner, but it's important that the folks let us know what they're thinking, whether we agree or not. We need to hear it about what affects our district and their thoughts on it so that we can make more informed decisions for our constituents.
All right. Thank you, Representative Dixon. And finally, Senator Woodward.
I'll be serving on the Senate Finance Committee, which meets jointly with the House Appropriations Committee as JFAC, and also be serving on the Education Committee. So I have just two committees this year, which worked out just fine because one meets 5 days a week, the other meets 4 days a week. So I'm not shorting the taxpayers with nine meetings a week. I appreciate the opportunity to serve the district, and certainly always welcome to hear input. All of us, our email addresses are first J. Woodward, so first letter of the first name and the last name. Mine is jwoodward@senate.idaho.gov, and then
ours would be house.idaho.gov.
Yes, hscott@house.idaho.gov, sdixon@house.idaho.gov, and those are, of course, available on the legislature.idaho.gov website.
Well, we want to thank you for coming in. This is kind of like a little in-house town hall meeting without questions. We are the constituents asking the questions today, and we really appreciate Representative Heather Scott, Representative Sage Dixon, and Senator Jim Woodward. You have a big job ahead of you. It's a lot of information. At the end of the session, sometime would be April probably or May, we'd love to have you come back, tell us how it went, and have this be an ongoing communication source for you.
Great.
And as Heather, Representative Scott and I were talking about before we got together on air here, we talked about engagement, as you mentioned, and legislature.idaho.gov, I think, is also a site you can go to and actually watch things happening. We could see you down there actually doing your work. And the importance of engagement, we were talking about the smelter. How important was it that people got involved? And big, right?
It was huge, and it made a difference. The public input is huge because all those comments will now be taken into consideration for the draft EIS.
Exactly. So, folks, the message is be involved. Again, thank you so much for coming in. We wish you well down in Boise.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was our interview with Senator Jim Woodward, Representative Sage Dixon, and Representative Heather Scott, our District 1 legislators. This is 88.5 KRFY. Thanks for listening this morning. We're going to go out tomorrow morning. You can tune in to the morning show with Jim and Jack. Their guests will be Bonner County Human Rights Task Force folks talking about student art projects. We're going to go out with Amy Winehouse. Our day will come. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.